Welcome.
Hare Krishna.
Today's talk I called, entitled, Calling on Krishna. I'm sure some of you have called on Krishna on occasion. For many years, from time to time. I was just in Mayapur, my own self, for a couple of weeks on my spiritual retreat, which is very, very enlivening. And I came across a couple of stories, so that's what I want to share with you today. So firstly, did you ask yourself at some point in time, you said, how did I get here? How did I end up here in this world? I mean, how did this come about? And then you see what happens in this world. It's not that fair. It's not that just. A lot of people suffer here. A lot of people. Whenever I complain about anything, my wife says to me, first world problems. That's how she replies to me. This is a first world problem. Forget that. It's not even important. This is not a third world problem. She's right. So I have to surrender. What can I do? How did we get here in this world where people suffer, where there's injustice, where people grow old, they get ill, sometimes they die young, very young, and we all die. But no one wants any of these things, yet we have them. So for many people, this seems completely unjust and unfair, but you got here. So according to Vedanta, we're here because we were in the spiritual realm and we didn't like it there somehow. We thought, well, God's in charge. Why is he in charge? I want to be in charge. And of course, God, in his infinite mercy, oh, you want to be in charge? You want to be the center of your own orbit? Okay, no problem. You can do that. You can be that. But not here in the spiritual world. Because here, I, God, I'm in charge. I'm the center. And those who love me and who are devoted to me are here with me. But I have a place for you. It's down there a ways. You can go there. So what do we find in the Old Testament of the Bible? What do they call that? They call that man's original sin. That's the original sin. And we get the allegory of Adam and Eve being driven from the Garden of Eden. That's us. Here we are. Why do people come here? Because they're either envious of God, or we think we are God, or we think there is no God. So here we are. The result? Suffering and death. And we can't escape. Apparently, can't escape. But we can escape. We can get out. So that's what the process of yoga is all about. It's how to free yourself from the wheel of samsara. Repeated birth and death. Is this an easy process? Not exactly. Can it be done? Yeah, absolutely. Can you do it in this lifetime? Yes, you can. But you have to be fixed with that goal in mind. And your behavior, your conduct, must reflect that. Correct? Okay, so in the Bhagavad Gita, I know most of you know this, so I might say a couple extra things that I know that there are others here that do not know. Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita about 5,000 years ago prior to a battle. Krishna, who's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, agreed to Bipartasarathi to drive the chariot of Arjun. Arjun and his brothers had been tricked or swindled out of their kingdom. They are known as the Pandavas. And their evil cousins, or nefarious cousins, or envious cousins, the Kauravas, had swindled them out of their kingdom by inviting them to a game of dice. Now you might think, well, that's kind of foolish. Why they do that? According to Kshatriya code, Kshatriya is people who are warriors or princes or kings or those who rule and who look after the population. According to Kshatriya code, or princely code, if you like, you can't not accept a challenge. If you're challenged, you must accept the challenge. That's their code. It's not everybody's code, but it's theirs. So they had to agree to this dice game. And it didn't go well. Anyway, the Pandavas were close to Krishna throughout their entire lives. In fact, they were related to Krishna. Some people knew Krishna was God. I've pointed this out before. Prabhupada said, you know, there were millions of people around back then. A few hundred people knew that Krishna was actually God. And most did not. And even if you said, well, see him over there, he's God. Yeah, okay. They wouldn't necessarily accept. But the Pandavas pretty much knew who he was. Not completely, that is. Not completely. Not on every level, which they found out during the vision of the universal form. Yeah. So, in this story, we've come to the end of Krishna's appearance on the planet. Krishna was on the planet 5,000 years ago. For how long? This is Kali Yuga, the Iron Age. In the previous Yuga, or Universal Age, the Dwapara Yuga, which was the Bronze Age, that's when Krishna was here. Here, in this lifetime, people live supposedly to 100 years. Humans. Do they? Rarely. In the previous Yuga, in Dwapara Yuga, humans live to 1,000 years old. So Krishna was on the planet only for 125 years. So, just when he's ready to leave, his cousin Uddhava, you know Uddhava? Uddhava was a favorite of Krishna's. He did all kinds of things here. I'm going to just read some of this to you. So one day Uddhava asked Krishna, why did he not save the Pandavas? Why did he not rescue or protect the Pandavas when they played the dice game with Duryodhana, their cousin, and Shakuni, his uncle? So what we all know, that those of us who have read or know about the Mahabharata, is that Duryodhana's uncle, who played the dice, Shakuni, was a crook. He was a thief. He was a trickster. He was a cheat. That's what he was. And when they lost the dice game, they actually got cheated out of the dice game and subsequently lost their kingdom. So Uddhava says, why didn't you do something? Krishna explains. From his childhood, Uddhava had been with Krishna, driving his chariot and serving him in many ways. He never asked for any wish or boon from Krishna. Everybody asks God for all kinds of things. Uddhava had never asked for anything his entire lifetime with Krishna. When Krishna was on the verge of completing his avatar, his appearance, he summoned Uddhava and said, "Dear Uddhava, in this avatar of mine, many people have asked and received boons and blessings from me, but you've never asked me for anything. Why don't you ask for something now? I will happily give it to you. Let me complete this incarnation with the satisfaction of doing something good for you also. So did Uddhava ask for something material or tangible for himself? No. True to nature, he didn't. Even though Uddhava did not ask anything for himself, he had been observing Krishna from his childhood. And he had always wondered about the apparent disconnect between Krishna's teachings and actions. Sometimes Krishna behaved in ways that seemed contradictory. So between his teachings and his actions. And he wanted to understand the reason for this. This is the boon, he asked. I need to understand why you behaved in certain ways at certain times. Uddhava asked Krishna, Lord, you taught us to live in one way, but seemingly you lived in a different way. In the role you played in the drama of the Mahabharata, I did not understand many things. I'm curious to understand the reasons for your actions. So Uddhava begins. First of all, Krishna, tell me, who's a real friend? What is the definition of a real friend? And Krishna replies, the real friend is he who comes to the help of his friend in need, even without being called. Sounds like a real friend, doesn't it? If we're called for our help, we're called upon by our friends, and we go and help, we consider that good friendship, do we not? That's an example of a real friend. But to anticipate the need of your friend and go before being asked. That's how he defines it. Uddhava says, but Krishna, you are the dearest friend of the Pandavas, the five princes, including Dharmaraj or Yudhishthir, who was the king. He sat on the throne among those brothers. He was the king. He's the oldest. They trusted you fully as Apad Bandava, the protector from all difficulties. That's what your friend's there, to save you from harm and to get you out of trouble, right? Apad Bandava. Krishna, you not only know what is happening now, but you also know what's going to happen. You know the future, you know the past, you know it all. You just gave me the definition of a true close friend, but then why did you not act in accord with that definition? I don't understand. Why didn't you stop Dharmaraj from gambling in the dice game to begin with? If not that, why did you not turn the luck in favor of your friend, Dharmaraj, by which he would have ensured that Dharma would have been proved victorious? So Dharma meaning justice, truth, righteousness, would have won out, right? But this also you didn't do. You could have at least saved Dharmaraj by stopping the game after he had lost his wealth, his kingdom, and his very self. You know what happens? He becomes a little bit unstable as this match progresses. And then he starts betting his brothers, his kingdom, his wealth, his brother. And then it went to his brothers. He was gambling them off. At the very least, he's a little unstable at that point, no? They say gambling's a fever. Is it not? Well, I don't wish a gambling fever on any of you, my friends. Uddhava continued. You could have released him from punishment for gambling, or you could have entered the hall when he started staking his brothers as his bet. But you didn't do either. You didn't stop him. At least when Duryodhana attempted Dharmaraj by offering to return everything he had lost if he would bet Draupadi, his wife. You bet your wife, you can have all these other things back. And Draupadi, as we know, was married to all five of the Pandavas. We won't get into the history of that whole story. But she was married to five brothers. And Draupadi always brought good fortune to the Pandavas. We've talked about this in the past. When you get married, did you marry the goddess of fortune? Has your life got better? Has it got easier? Has your karma improved? Is life expansive? Now, this doesn't go just one way from the man to the woman. I know the woman is supposed to be the goddess of fortune, and she is. But it can go the other way. If the woman marries somebody, her life's fine, then she marries somebody, and it starts going spiraling down. That's the same thing, the other direction, no? So our marriage is supposed to be a union of two people who creates, this union creates expansion in our lives, both materially and spiritually. Especially from our point of view, from yoga practice, spiritually. Materially is fine, but what, no spiritual connection, no spiritual expansion? Yeah. So, ladies, you must become the goddess of fortune. Otherwise, you might be the goddess of misfortune, and that we don't want. Okay, so Draupadi, he says, why didn't you, when Duryodhana offered to return everything he lost, if you bet on Draupadi, you could have intervened with your divine power, Krishna, and you could have made the dice roll in a way that would have been favorable to Dharmaraj. What does he have to do to make the dice roll and turn up whatever numbers? He's a god. He can do whatever he wants. Right? Instead, you intervened only when Draupadi almost lost her modesty, and you can now say that you provided her with clothing and saved her modesty. Because Dushasan pulls her out into the assembly, and he starts unraveling her sari. He starts pulling it and pulling it and pulling it and pulling it, and he wants to expose her nakedness in front of this huge hall of all men. And she's a married woman. So they want to shame her and embarrass her husbands who are sitting there. But how can you even make such a claim, since she had already been dragged into the hall by the evil Dushasan and disrobed in front of so many people? What modesty was left for the poor woman? What have you actually saved? Now, she wasn't completely disrobed, for those of you who don't know. Only when you help a person at the time of crisis can you be called Apad Bandhava. This is a time of crisis. You did nothing. Why? I don't understand. That's what he's saying. As Uddhava posed these questions, tears begin to roll down from his eyes. Because he was feeling the pain of what the Pandavas and Draupadi had gone through. And he couldn't understand through morality and justice Krishna's actions in this regard. I would dare say many of us who are familiar with the Mahabharata or have read the Mahabharata would have asked the same questions. Huh? Why didn't he step in? Why didn't he do this? Why didn't he do that? Why didn't he prevent the Pandavas from ending up in exile for how many years?
13 years.
12 years, and then a 13th year where they had to go incognito, wasn't it? Yeah, I think so. Krishna smiled. My dear Uddhava, the law of the world is The one who uses vivek. What is vivek? It is discretion, correct judgment, wisdom. That's vivek. Or we say in English, use your head. Don't we? You must use your vivek. While Duryodhana used vivek, Dharmaraj lacked it. Well, judging by the bets he was making, I dare say he was lacking vivek to a great degree. And that is why Dharmaraj lost, says Krishna. Uddhava was still confused. Krishna continued. While Duryodhana had lots of money and wealth to gamble, he did not know how to play the game of dice. He did not have that ability. That is why he used his uncle Shakuni to play the game while he himself placed the bets. That is vivek. He picked Shakuni, who was supposed to be a master at dice, who was a master at cheating, and he appointed him to play on his behalf. What do we say, my friends? Play to your strengths. Don't play to your weaknesses. If you're weak or you're not expert in something, get somebody to help you. Don't we do that? We do that every day when we call up experts or plumbers or electricians or counselors. Isn't that what we do? Of course. Dharmaraj, Krishna continues, Dharmaraj also could have thought similarly and offered that I, Krishna, his cousin, would play on his behalf. If Shakuni and I had played the game of dice, who do you think would have won? Says Krishna. Would he have rolled the numbers I called, or would I have rolled the numbers he called? What do you think is more likely? Well, I'd say Krishna probably would have won that match, hands down, because he knew what numbers would come up anyway. Continuing, I can forgive the fact that he forgot to include me in the game, says Krishna. I can forgive the fact. Krishna was hurt, and he didn't call on him for his help. He didn't call me. I can forgive that, right? I can forgive the fact that he forgot to include me in the game, but without vivek, he made yet another blunder or another mistake. He prayed that I should not enter the gambling hall, as he did not want me to know that through ill fate he had been compelled to play this game. So he didn't want Krishna in the gambling hall. Because he was embarrassed, because he found himself in this situation. So he didn't want Krishna in there. So obviously that's the answer. Now here, this is the important part, right here, my friends. This is why I'm telling you this story. He tied me with his prayers and did not allow me to enter the hall. I was just outside the hall waiting for someone to call me through their prayers. What does that tell us? One must call on Krishna. He won't interfere. He won't come running. He'll give the reasons in a minute. You have to call. You have to invite him. You have to ask. You have to importune before he'll come. Yeah. Even when Bhima, Arjuna, Nakula, and Sahadev, all the brothers, were lost, they were only cursing Duryodhana and brooding over their fate. They didn't call me. So they were so frustrated in what had happened to them. They were so angry at Duryodhana. No one called on Krishna. None of the five brothers called on. He didn't appear then, did he? Even Draupadi did not call me when Dushasan held her hair and dragged her into the assembly hall, carrying out his brother's order. Draupadi was also arguing in the hall based on her own abilities. What is the first thing we try to do in any circumstance, especially when we're in trouble? We go to defense. We try to defend ourselves through words, actions if we have to. This is second nature to all of us. You know, if somebody puts their hand up like, you don't even think, you go like this to protect yourself. We all do, right? What do they call that?
Reflex action.
Reflex action, yeah, exactly. So Draupadi was arguing in the hall based on her own abilities and never called Krishna. So then he says, finally, good sense prevailed. When Dushasan started disrobing her, she gave up depending on her own strength and started shouting, Hari, Hari, Krishna, Krishna. That's the first time anybody called him, either silently or out loud. And Krishna says, only then did I have the opportunity to save her modesty. God never interferes, ever, unless you call him. And I acted as soon as I was called, and I preserved her modesty. What was my mistake in this situation? He asks. So let's quote Bhagavad Gita at this point. Yayata mam prapadyante tangstativa bhajam yaham, which means, this is Krishna speaking in the Bhagavad Gita, the science of yoga. I respond to persons according to the manner and mood in which they approach me or surrender to me. It's up to you. In the purport, Baladev Vidyabhushan says, Krishna is the Lord of all beings, possessing many forms like the Vaidurya gem. Krishna and Vishnu, same person. Krishna, two-armed form. Vishnu, four-armed form. Where is the Vaidurya mani, the Vaidurya gem? And Vaidurya gem changes colors. It's dynamic. It's not static. So whatever form you want to approach God, whatever form you are most attracted to, and we know from the Vedas that there are hundreds of forms God can take, that is the form, the mood in which you want to approach God. You want to have a neutral exchange on reverence, bowing down, Allahu Akbar, or do you want to serve? You want to serve God? You want to do what he needs? Or do you want to become his friend and befriend him and be on the same level, hang out with him? Or do you want to become his parent in one of his incarnations? Order him around and tell him what to do and cook his food? Or do you want to become his love in an intimate relationship? All of these things are available. He approaches his devotee according to the mood that the devotee has approached him. Makes complete sense. Uddhava says in response to what Krishna has told him, wonderful explanation, Vasudev. I'm impressed, however. I am not convinced. Not easily convinced, Uddhava. Does it mean that you will come only when you are called? Will you not come on your own to help people in crisis? to establish justice? I'm confused. I mean, come on. You're God. Or supposed to be. Krishna smiles. Krishna always smiles. Krishna doesn't really get upset. Except when he's got a demon that he has to dispatch. Even then he smiles. Krishna smiles. Uddhava, in this world, everyone's life proceeds based on their own karma. I don't control it. I don't interfere in it. I am only the witness, the sakshi, the witness. I stand next to you and observe whatever is happening. I just observe. That is my dharma. Bhagavad Gita says, sarvasya chaham ridhi sannivishto. That Krishna is situated in the hearts of all beings. All beings. A blade of grass, an ant, humans, animals, as the witness. Your soul is in there, you the soul, the spiritual being that you are, you're in there, in the heart, and Krishna's in there. Soul, super soul. Just watches. He doesn't even write anything down. He doesn't even take notes. He has somebody else to do that. That's Yamaraj's job. Did you catch that? Write that down. No, he doesn't say that. He just watches. That's all he does. What is he waiting for? He's waiting. He's waiting for you. He's here and you're right there. Huh? And you're busy doing this and you're enjoying all the fruits of all the different things you can do in the material world, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. And he's right there. On all you have to do is this. Oh, Krishna, when did you get here? I've been here the whole time. Oh, I've been waiting and waiting and waiting. What is that, a clock? No, that's lifetimes going by. I'm sort of teasing about that part, but time is here. Time is not in the spiritual world. So, God does not interfere. That's not what he does. Now, here's another quote from Bhagavad Gita. Gatir Bharta Prabhu Sakshi Nivasa Sharanam Surit. Krishna says, I am the goal, the sustainer, the master, the witness. Sakshi, the witness. The abode, the refuge, and the surit, the most dear friend. Who's your dearest friend? God in the heart. And most of us don't even realize that is our dearest friend. Most of us just ignore him. At our peril. Here's another quote, Bhagavad Gita, Soham sarvabhuteshu name dvesho stinapara ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya maite teshu cha pyaham. He says, I am equal to all beings. I do not hate anyone, nor do I favor anyone. He's neutral. But those who worship me with devotion are in me and I am them. Oh, so what's the difference? Those who worship me with devotion, those who enter into a personal, reciprocal relationship with me, I am in. They are in me and I am them. We are together. We are connected. That's what makes the difference. Uddhava continues, in that case, you will stand next to us and observe all our evil acts, and as we keep committing more and more sins, making mistakes, you'll just sit there watching us. Do you want us to commit mistakes and accumulate more sins and ultimately suffer? Is that what you want? This Uddhava is a hard guy to convince here, isn't he? Krishna says, Uddhava, please realize the deeper meaning of your statements. When you understand and realize that I am standing as the witness right here, right next to you, when you actually begin to realize that directly, how could you possibly do anything wrong or anything bad or commit a mistake? How could you? When you truly realize I'm here. You could not do anything of the kind. However, you forget this and think you can do things without my knowledge. That is when you get into trouble. I dare say that's true. Have any of you gotten into trouble once or twice in your life? There's an honest man. Every day, he says. That's why you're here. Okay. Now, see, this is how you get out of trouble. You start recognizing that you're not alone. It's not all on you. You don't have to make all the big decisions. Give it to God. If you're confused, you know, there's a statement in the Vedas that says, when you're uncertain, do not act. Never take action amidst uncertainty. Wait, be patient until it becomes clear to you what the right course of action is. Then act. Okay? So if you don't know the right course of action, ask him. Ask him. And wait for him to tell you. Ask for a sign. Has anybody asked for signs in the past? Show me, give me some indications, give me a sign as to what I should do. Of course you have, right? Have you ever gotten a sign? Show of hands, please. Yeah, it's about half the people. That's very good. Yeah, of course. You know, this is a dynamic experience here. This is not stuff on a page. This is how to live your life. Okay. However, Krishna continues, you forget this and think you can do things without my knowledge. This is when you get into trouble. Dharmaraj's ignorance was that he thought he could play the game of dice without my knowing. Krishna was outside, outside of the hall, and he knew he was there, and he was praying, Krishna, don't come inside here. Whatever you do, don't come inside. I'd be too embarrassed. Huh? So what did Krishna do? Well, I guess I better wait outside. He doesn't want me in there. Big mistake. If Dharmaraj had realized that I am always present with everyone in the form of the witness, the Sakshi, then wouldn't the game have finished differently? That's his question. Uddhava was spellbound by Krishna's statements and became overwhelmed with bhakti, with love and devotion. It's a hard man to break down, huh? Took a while. Uddhava said, such deep understanding, O Keshava, such profound truth. When we pray, perform puja, worship, and call on you for help, we do this according to our faith and belief, don't we? Most of us have done that, no? But when we start to truly realize that nothing exists or moves without you, how can we not feel your presence as witness? How can we forget this and act otherwise? So it's the actual tangible realization. He's here. Have you had that feeling sometimes? It just comes over you and you're like, wow. You know you're not alone. You feel this sense of well-being. You know, sometimes you get a team driving down the road, you know, it's just some of those days where you feel so connected. You feel divinely inspired and divinely protected. Yeah? And that's the feeling. That's it. That's the one we want to hold on to and sustain. Throughout the Bhagavad Gita, this is the essential truth that Krishna has tried to impart to Arjuna. He was the charioteer as well as the guru for Arjuna. But he would not fight Arjuna's battle. Krishna doesn't fight your battles. That's not what he does. He helps you to do your dharma, do your duty, fight your own battles, or deal with your own challenges. We must come to truly realize that the ultimate sakshi, witness, the one who is the witness to everyone and everything, sits quietly within us all and simply observes. When we become constantly aware of Krishna's presence within us and interact with him always and in all circumstances, that state of being is called Krishna consciousness or God consciousness. That's how you know. How do I know when I'm making progress in spiritual life? That's how you know. Because you're always aware that he's there. Always. Constantly. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, Krishna says, Ananyash chintayantomam yejana paryupasate tesham nityabhiyuktanam yogakshemam bahamyaham. But those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. I love that verse. Carry what you lack. He will provide what you don't have. And whatever you do have that's working for you and has value to you, he will preserve that. So therefore, nothing will be missing, correct? And then what does he say at the end? He speaks the entire Bhagavad Gita, the science of yoga, all the different yoga systems, and at the end, chapter 18, he says to Arjuna, Vimrishyaitad asheshena yat techchasi tata kuru, which means, everything I've said, please deliberate on this fully, and then do what you wish to do. That's God. Do what you wish to do. You decide what you're going to do. God never forces anyone to do anything, ever. Or that wouldn't be God. Doesn't work like that. He instructs you, he helps you, and then he leaves it to you to make your own decisions. Never interferes with your karma. We are in the Iron Age, age of Kali. Universe has four ages, or yugas, or epochs. They are similar to the four seasons that we go through, practically speaking. So we have the Golden Age, Satya Yuga. We have the Silver Age, Treta Yuga. We have the Bronze Age, Dwapara Yuga. And we have the Iron Age, Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga is like the winter of the universe. We are currently in this age, Kali Yuga. It is 432,000 human years in duration. How far are we advanced in it? 5,000 years. We only have another 427,000 years to go. And things are, I'm sure, going to get more and more wonderful over time. Though I doubt it. So, best thing to do get off the wheel of samsara and get out of here as soon as you can. That's just my advice. So, once the four Pandava brothers accept Yudhishthir, Arjuna, Bhima, Nakul, Sahadev, ask Krishna, what is Kali Yuga going to be? This is back in Dwapara Yuga before it shifted into Kali Yuga, right? Well, what's Kali Yuga going to be like? What's it actually going to be like, you know, in the world when it happens? And Krishna smiled. See, he's smiling again. And he says, let me demonstrate to you how Kali Yuga is going to behave. He took a bow and four arrows, and he shot the four arrows in the four directions, north, south, east, west. And he asked the four Pandavas to go and bring them back. So each one of the boys went in a different direction to find the arrow. When Arjuna picked up the arrow, he heard a very sweet voice. He turned around and saw a cuckoo bird, singing in a spellbinding voice. But at the same time, the cuckoo was also eating the flesh of a live rabbit, which was in great pain. The rabbit was in great pain. So he's being eaten while he's alive. Arjuna was very surprised to see such a gory act by such a divine bird, because the cuckoo is considered to be sacred to Krishna. In Vrindavan, they have cuckoos. So immediately he left that place. He didn't like what he saw. The other brother, Bhima, found Krishna's next arrow in a place where five wells were situated. Four wells and then a well in the middle. The four wells are overflowing with very sweet water, as if they were not able to hold all their water, and surprisingly, the well in the middle was empty. The well in the middle of these overflowing four wells was completely empty. Bhima was puzzled at this sight. Nakula, the other brother, he went and found the arrow, and he was returning to Krishna on his way back. He stopped to watch a cow who was about to give birth. After giving birth, the cow started licking her calf, but continued to lick it even after the calf was clean. Of course, all animals lick their babies when they come out. That's standard. And then we're done. But she kept licking and licking. With great difficulty, the people of the village were able to separate them, but by that time the calf had been injured badly from all the licking, too much. Nakula was puzzled by the behavior of such a calm, gentle animal as the cow. Sahadev, the fourth brother, discovered the arrow which had fallen near a mountain. At that moment he saw a big boulder falling from atop the mountain. The boulder was crushing rocks and big trees on its way down. But strangely, the same boulder was stopped by a small plant near the bottom of the mountain. How could a small plant stop a big boulder in its full flight near the bottom? He was amazed at this sight. The fourth Pandavas returned to Krishna and asked the meaning of these various incidents. Krishna smiled and began to explain. In Kali Yuga, the priests, the Brahmins, the so-called spiritual people, will have a very sweet voice and will also have great knowledge. But they will exploit their followers, their devotees, in the same way the cuckoo was eating the live rabbit. Have we seen any exploitation from clergy in our world? I dare say. A lot of exploitation. It's endemic to this age. Krishna continued, in Kali Yuga, the poor will live among the rich. The rich people will have enormous amounts of wealth, which will actually overflow. But they will not offer a single penny to the poor in the same way as the four wells didn't have a single drop of water for the empty well. How much money do you need? There's another statement in the Vedas that it says, you should only have as much money as you can use. What you can't use, you give away. Lakshmi, the accumulation of wealth, is often compared in the Vedas to a river. You go to the river, you take out whatever water you need, don't you? For washing, for drinking, for cooking, for whatever. Feeding your animals. And what you don't need, you put back. This is how wealth works. You don't hoard it. You don't hold on to it. It's not that you can't put something aside for a rainy day. But when you have billions and billions, why do you have billions and billions? So you can say you have billions and billions. I have more than you have. Therefore, I am superior to you because I have more money. No. Money is a resource. It's an energy. It needs to be used. It needs to be put into play, put into practice. Hare Krishna. Right? Krishna continues, in Kali Yuga, well, this is one that I think is interesting. Parents will love their children so much that their love will actually spoil them and will destroy their lives, similar to the love shown by the cow to her newborn calf. Have we seen any examples of that in the modern day? Do you think? Oh, my goodness. The millenniums, as I've been told by many of my clients. Yeah, I heard a millennium. And? Millennials, sorry. A millennial. And they wanted to make a difference. Well, that's good. That's a good quality. You start at the bottom. I don't care what your education is. You can be a PhD, you still start at the bottom. You work your way up. You learn the system. You learn. You qualify yourself. There's many children are spoiled nowadays, and they're overly protected from this, that, and the other. When I was a kid, you go to a sporting event, you might win a ribbon. You participate, maybe you'd win a ribbon. Most of us didn't win ribbons because we weren't in first, second, or third place. Now everybody gets a ribbon. We all get a ribbon. What, for showing up, you get a ribbon. This is not, it's not how the world works, is it? The real world doesn't work like that. So, you're seeing this being played out in the modern day. So I know all you good parents here will not raise your children in that fashion, so my mind is at ease. In Kali Yuga, Krishna continues, people will fall down in terms of character like the boulder from the mountain, and nothing and no one will be able to stop their fall. Well, that one's close to home. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that's happened to one or two of us, maybe more than once in our lifetime, but that's okay. However, at the end, only the name of God will be able to keep them from doom, like the little plant that held the boulder from its further fall. So the little plant is the Harinam, is the name of God. So that's why we recommend chanting mantra, prayer, Hare Krishna, Maha Mantra. What is a Maha Mantra? That's the great one, the big one, the powerful one. Why is it called that? Because it can remove all of your karma. It can clear the slate for you. Because of the names of God. God is absolute. His name, form, past times is absolute. So when you invoke the name, you're getting the benefits. It's like direct association. Even if you can't see God by chanting, we're getting that direct association. And so like the little plant, it can stop the fall. And the fall we're all heading for is death. We're all heading in that direction. Okay. Thank you for your kind attention. Hare Krishna. Questions, comments? Good. Yeah. Emily?
How often and under what circumstance do you know to call on Krishna? For example, are you supposed to endeavor to do as much as you can yourself, and then when it goes wrong, you call Krishna? Or are you supposed to call Krishna from the start and ask him for help for everything, and then is it just help you're asking for?
What did we just learn in that story about Krishna and the Pandavas and the gambling match? What didn't they do? They didn't call on him. And look what happened.
They were in trouble. Like, so if things are good, are you supposed to just... I don't mean leave Krishna alone. Obviously, you're doing your sadhana and stuff, but are you supposed to keep asking him for help when everything's good?
Well, I don't know that you need to ask him for help when everything's good and things are clear. I think it's more when you're confused. You know, a lot of people are confused or in states of doubt and uncertainty. I mean, how many times have you been in that state of mind? Probably how many times today have you been in that state of mind when you've thought about one thing or other thing in your life? Correct? So it's not you have to call, you know, I don't know that you need to call on them if you're going to make a nice aloo gobi preparation, cauliflower potato, sabji. Although, I sometimes ask him, Krishna, what would you like for dinner?
It's like, where is the balance?
Well, as long as there's a balance and not an imbalance. I don't think you have to call on him for everything, but when you're in, what he's really showing here is, they were in a state of distress, the Pandavas. And they didn't call him. Well, they did finally, but it was too late. Right? And Uddhava's whole thesis was, well, how come you didn't interfere? Why didn't you stop all this misfortune? They didn't call me. You know, if you see two people having, I don't know, a disagreement or an argument on the street, in a store, you walk up right in the middle and stick your nose in and start to sort it out. How many people do that? Mostly none of us. They didn't ask us to do anything. You're liable to get something if you stick your nose in, right? Unless somebody's hurting somebody, that'd be different. But if it's just a conversation. So, vivek. You must use vivek. Discrimination. When to call. You want Krishna to help you, but you don't want it, you don't moan and, you know, become overly needy. I don't, what do you want, a codependent relationship with Krishna? I don't think so. Yes?
While you're on the subject, what sort of signs would you get? Let's say, you know, you're at a crossroad and you're going left or right. Let's say, you make your phone call and you get connected with Krishna. you know, do you just sit there and wait kind of thing? Or like some sort of, you know, sign?
No, no, you don't sit and wait. You just go about your business and you look for a sign. You know, I there's so many examples of signs. One man was beginning a relationship with this woman, and it was, I don't know if I should go forward or if I shouldn't go forward. They stopped seeing each other for a couple weeks. And then she called him and says, well, why don't you come down and see me at my house, right? So he's going, thinking, feeling inside of himself, gee, I don't know if this is a good idea. Should I invest my time with this person, or what should I do? Anyway, he agreed to go and see her. So this happened in Los Angeles. So he's driving on the freeway, and he's going south toward her house. That means all the five lanes going this way and five lanes going the other way. In America, we drive on the right-hand side, as I'm sure most of you know. On the left-hand side of the freeway, off to the hard shoulder, was a truck. And the truck was on fire. Now, you'd think, oh yeah, the truck's engine was on fire, because when you see a vehicle on fire, it's usually the engine. No! The entire truck was on fire, which is extremely unusual. To see a vehicle at the side of the road burning, the whole vehicle. When have you seen that? Right? So he's driving to her house. There's your omen. There's your sign. What is that sign? Tell me what it means. The left side, by the way, is the feminine side. That's where the truck was, on the left side, and he was on the right side driving down. What's the answer? Yep. The relationship is going to go up in flames. And what happened? Tell me, in real life, what happened? That's what happened. It took a couple months. That's what happened. That's a sign. Two people were driving down the road, husband and wife. They're talking about this other person that they're thinking of. I don't know if it was business or something they were going to do with this other person here in Ireland. And who crossed the road in front of them? What animal? Tell me. No. Nope. The fox. Mr. Fox. The foxy one. That's right. I will... Since it was myself and my wife, every time we mention this man, I'm telling you honestly, because we mentioned him on several occasions at other times, a fox would appear, just like every time. Because he's a foxy guy. Let's see. Be careful. You know? Yes. Ask Krishna. It's not that hard to do, really. You ask for a sign. Sometimes you'll see a truck with a big sign on it, and that sign will tell you in words. It will answer your question. I'm just trying to think. I know so many of these, but I'm off the top of my head. I can't think right now. Because I've had so many myself through the years. Just pay attention. You can, anything and anyone can show you. You know, you can actually ask for a sign, and then you walk down the street and some guy walks by and you hear a conversation. You hear like a snippet of a conversation. Just a few words, and that'll be the answer. You're thinking about this problem of yours, and then you hear a few words. And this guy says to the other guy, yeah, I think we should do it. I don't know what he says, you know, for example. Here's your answer. It happens like that. You got to test it out, and you have to become familiar with it. This is called the science of omens. When you read the Vedas, how many omens, you know, did Ravana see when he finally came out of the palace to fight Ram? There's all kinds of omens. You can, the Vedas give you long lists of them. You know? It's not hard. Become aware. Become conscious. You know, we walk through life like we're sleepwalking most of the time. No offense. We're not paying attention. We need to pay attention. The more conscious you become, the less unconscious you'll be. Isn't it? Okay? Thank you.